years ago.
So what happened in 2002?
It was the 10th anniversary of the Mabo decision, and all the major protagonists came down here. Father Rice, Grandfather Passy, they all came down here. Eddie Mabo's widow. There was Torres Strait Islander dancers. It was all courtesy of the Melbourne City Hall. And there was a huge people celebrating that 10th anniversary, because what people forget is it was a Melbourne law firm which provided the pro bono work that won the High Court case. It was a Melbourne law firm. It wasn't a Queensland law firm, it was a Melbourne law firm.
Yeah, are people doing something that actually changes things?
That's right. And so that was it. But unfortunately, as we're 4,000 kilometres from the Torres Strait, we're in the Torres Strait. The Torres Strait Authority has declared today a public holiday. It's always been a public holiday to celebrate Mabo Day. You'll find that here in Victoria, 4,000 kilometres away, most people don't even know what the Torres Strait Islander flag is and what that funny flag is that's actually flying one of Australia's recognised official flags.
It's interesting that something as significant as the Mabo decision, it really significant to the denting the colonial state in Australia. It's like the Red Sea, the water just closes over as if it never happened.
The dilemma is that it's what it actually challenges land ownership. And that's what all radical struggles, reformist struggles, revolutionary struggles are based on: two principles, land and liberty. And it challenged land ownership for the first time in a legal framework, not through direct action, but legally, where the idea that this country wasn't inhabited because there were no buildings, terra nullius, was actually overthrown by the courts. But it was a very close decision, it was 4-3. And the fact is that then they had to pass bucket loads of legislation to try to extinguish native title. Now, a lot of Aboriginal groups make the mistake of thinking that the dilemma was the Mabo decision. It's not the Mabo decision, the dilemma is what happened after that to actually extinguish the Mabo decision.
Yeah, the soul of greed. The thing that's most important, which is really fantastic, is that the reason for why it was such a showstopper for the powers that be is that they themselves, the English law itself, is based on the concept of private ownership of land.
That's right. And what the Mabo High Court, what Eddie Mabo and Passy and Rice demonstrated in their 10-year odyssey through the courts is that Torres Strait Islanders had familial rights to land. It wasn't a common ownership, but familial rights. They could actually point out, and the High Court went to the Torres Strait, went to Mur, they could point out where the boundaries were, right into the sea, because they had rocks which marked the boundaries, the gardens and access. And that's what happened, is when they were confronted by the fact that it was about private ownership, it all collapsed. But it went on for 204 years. Extraordinary.
This mirror to the colonial state, the mirror to the English ruling class.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was. And that's its strength. The fact is that it shook the foundations regarding what the colonisation process was based on. It highlighted that it was based on pure and simple theft without compensation. The weakness in the Mabo decision is you had to show a continuing association or with the land, and the dilemma is that the further south you go, the greater was the genocide and the fewer the survivors, and the ability of people to actually survive and demonstrate, like the Fail Yorta Yorta case here in Victoria, demonstrated how high the bar was set by legislation. For example, legislation was passed which said although people got native title, the mining companies, if they found minerals on that land, the original owners did not have the right to veto. They only had the right to negotiate for some type of royalty. Minuscule in many regards. And people like Stokes have been very successful in turning different clans against each other and not actually really compensating people for what's happening on their land today. So you don't blame the decision. The decision opened up a mechanism by which what the Whitlam Labor government did in 72-73 by introducing land rights in Northern Territory in the ACT, it opened up, it gave that a legal basis.
What's fascinating to me is the level of fight that it takes to get fairness made clear and how easy it is for money to undermine the principles of justice.
It's very simple for money and power to override. But again, it's all based on the concept of access to land, whether you lease it, whether you rent it, whether you own it. And that's what colonisation is about. It's about removing the original owners, putting down a structure, not providing compensation. And I understand there is progress currently in terms of the position. I personally take my lead from the Uluru Statement from the Heart, where delegates, not representatives, but delegates from most of the groups in Australia congregated in Uluru, the dead heart of our country, and asked for three things. They asked for voice in the Constitution, because they remember what happened to ATSIC when the Howard government got into power. They asked for truth-telling, and they asked for a treaty. So, obviously, in which comes first, obviously, is a matter for debate. But the fact is, in a referendum, it's the Australian people which give the government the go-ahead to continue to negotiate with First Nations people. Treaties are about relationship between First Nations people and the government of the day. It's not about the Australian people. The 1966 referendum was important because it opened up the gateway to land rights legislation. The Mabo decision opened up the gateway to native title, and I reckon a successful voice referendum, irrespective of how powerful it's going to be, gives future governments permission to move forwards in terms of negotiating a treaty or treaties with different First Nations people. Because it's the Australian people that decide, not the government of the day.
Yeah, it's interesting, as we move into potential collapse of this civilization because of the environmental destruction, how important Indigenous relational connections to country are.
Well, they're central. They're central. Today's Mabo Day, 3rd of June. It's a public holiday in the Torres Strait to acknowledge the importance of that day, when the High Court of Australia determined on the 3rd of June 1992, 31 years ago, that this country's First Nations people had rights to land in law because of their continuing association with this land. My name's Joseph Toscano. I'm the husband of the late Ellen Jose. In 2002, here in Melbourne, there was a very large Mabo gathering of some of the primary participants in the court case, and the Melbourne City Council gave those people the keys to the city. So what is Mabo? The further you get away from the Torres Strait, the less important it seems to people, especially people who in authority. This is Reconciliation Week, and what people forget is that Reconciliation Week is bookended by 2 days. The 27th of May, which is the anniversary of the 1967 referendum. The 26th of May is National Sorry Day, which again in Melbourne was almost totally ignored. And the 3rd of May, the end of Reconciliation Week, is Mabo Day. So what's Mabo Day? Eddie Mabo lived on Mur in the Torres Strait until he was expelled by the local council on Mur for being a troublemaker.
and he found his way to Townsville University, where he worked as a gardener. This wasn't a man who was an academic, but during his lunch hour, he would go into the library and read books there. And at that particular point in time in the 70s and 80s, the Bjelke-Petersen government was forcefully removing First Nations peoples from their lands under the point of a gun, burning their homes and forcing them away in order to for mining ventures to occur. So over a period of time, Eddie Mabo fought that the concept of terra nullius, the legal fiction that this land belonged to no one, was just that, total legal fiction. For 240 years, the Australian state had said in its legal documents that this land, where people had lived for over 60,000 years, belonged to no one. And this is how they justified the colonisation process, terra nullius. So this was the basis on which most of the racist legislation which occurred since the beginning of colonisation till 1992 was based on forceful relocation, removal of children, forced assimilation, people being basically monitored as far as their everyday movements was concerned, the setup of little more than concentration camps like in Palm Island and Cherbourg and many other places. And it was this legal basis, was terra nullius. Now, Eddie Mabo, Father Rice and Grandfather Passy, members of the Merc community, initiated a legal challenge through the federal courts to the concepts of terra nullius. And this this challenge went through the Queensland courts for over a decade. And despite legislation through state parliament, because of the 1967 referendum, which gave the Commonwealth government the power to legislate in terms of First Nations people, to actually trump state legislation, that the case eventually found its way to the High Court. Now, Eddie Mabo died 5 months before the judgment, but Grandfather Rice and Father Passy continued to survive long after the judgment. And on the 3rd of June 1992, the High Court, in a very, very close decision, 4-3, said that terra nullius was legal fiction. First Nations people who could demonstrate a continuing association to the land, and that's an important thing, continuous association to the land, had rights to land in law under European Australian law. So for the first time in Australian history, what we saw is the overturning of the fundamental premise that this country was based on. The legal fiction that the land belonged to no one, because they couldn't see cities, the land. So it was, if it belongs to no one, then anybody can come and claim it, and obviously the squatters claimed it. Now, you'd think this was the end of the situation, but it was just the beginning. Those of you who are old enough will remember the consternation and hysteria in the corporate-owned media, conservative sections of the government, the National Party, who claimed that they would bury the Mabo decision in bucket loads of extinguishment. And we saw during the Howard era legislation after legislation being passed through Parliament to dilute the essence of the Mabo judgment. Now, obviously, there are issues regarding native title in 2023. Most of these issues are not about native title. Most of these issues are actually about the legislation which was passed. For example, if you had native title over your land, which you won through the laborious court process, and some of these cases, like the Wick case, could take years, decades, you couldn't prevent a mining company from actually mining resources on your land. The only thing you're allowed to do, because of legislation, is negotiate over a period of time fixed for some type of compensation. And we've seen the Gina Reinhardts and the Kerry Stokes of the world become billionaires through denying people who've got native title rights to compensation for the minerals which have been removed from their land. This is due to legislation. Also, legislation has made it very difficult for many people who have no continuous association with the land, because the further south you get, and it's quite interesting that how few people even know today's Mabo Day, because it's not mentioned, the further south you get, the less continuous association you have with the land, because those people, as we saw in Tasmania, Victoria and southern New South Wales, were almost wiped from the face of the earth through some of the most brutal mechanisms to ensure that sheep were grown so they could send wool to the satanic mills in England in the 1830s and 1840s. So the other thing the legislation has done since native title is it pits Aboriginal group against Aboriginal group. And currently there are a number of federal court cases in place where one group says they are the sole owners, another group says they are, and there are debates going through, even on the land where we stand on today, the Bunurong land, between competing factions in that particular group. So it has caused issues, but the issue is not native title. The issue isn't Mabo Day. The issue is the legislation which was passed to actually nullify and destroy people's hopes. And that's what people remember. A lot of people continue to think it was the legislation itself. But the legislation itself was groundbreaking, because they used the colonisers' law to beat them in court. So why is Melbourne important? Melbourne is important because it was a legal firm here, Melbourne, which provided the pro bono assistance to get the case to the High Court, because Eddie Mabo, Father Passy and Grandfather Rice could not trust anybody in the legal system in Queensland because of the power that the Bjelke-Petersen government had in terms of attempting to destroy those organisations which took the case to court. They had extraordinary powers. So that firm was responsible basically for the success in the High Court. So there is a strong Melbourne connection. Now, my late wife, Ellen Jose, was the chairperson of the Torres Strait Islander Wongai Association, which was a small group of Torres Strait Islanders who lived in Melbourne in 2002, and they were instrumental in organising the 10th anniversary celebrations here. But 6 years previously, in 1995, she was a visual artist, she created this installation. Remember, this is 1995. In the Torres Strait, there is a ceremony which is called a tomb opening 3 years after somebody dies, they don't actually exhume the body, you can relax. But what they do is the family members gather, extended relatives gather, and they exchange gifts. And basically, it's an end of the mourning process. So in a very satirical, ironical way, she created this installation. Now, obviously, these palms and these flowers and the type of reeds that were used, these stones which actually mark the grave are actually the stones which actually, not the exact stones, but they're the stones which actually help to win the case. Because in the Torres Strait, there is individual ownership of land, not collective ownership. And different family groups knew what was theirs because of these stone boundaries, which the Eddie Marbo was able to straight to the court. So she did a tomb opening for Terra Nullius, and it's called Terra Nullius. Rest in peace, Terra Nullius, 26th of January 1788 to the 3rd of June 1992. Now you would think, because Ellen's got her work is represented in most of the major galleries in Australia, you would think that this installation would be snapped up by, would have been snapped up by some gallery like the National Gallery of Australia, but unfortunately there was very little interest in the installation itself. So this was her way of basically putting the finger up Terra Nullius in a culturally sensitive way, which people would forget.